and welcome to edition 326 of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast and our fourth World Cup special. We're still doing these amazing scenes. On the way, it's still coming home, the tabloids can stand down, and anything England can do, Norwich City can match it as they smash the Linnets 2-1. I think it was a smash, wasn't it? Yeah, 2-1. My name is Michael Bailey. Joining us this Monday morning from Archant Towers, we have Chief Norwich City Correspondent and newlywed, Paddy Davitt, Deputy Head of Sport here in Norfolk, Mark Armstrong, and Norwich City Corresponding Colleague, David Freezer. Gentlemen, a very good morning to you all. Paddy, first of all, welcome back. Congratulations.
Cheers, boss. Thank you, everybody. I haven't had any wedding gifts yet, so yes. Prospect House, care of Paddy Davitt. Thank you.
Is anyone, Dave, have you not sorted that out?
No, I was talking to our audience. But you boys were very, very much welcome at my festivities, if that's the right phrase. But as yet, still not had anything from the great public. All that work I do for you over the years, sort your lives out.
I think you kept it too quiet beforehand. That sort of thing. What a day though, Pad. Beautiful day.
It was a good day. Although I believe, because everything's a bit hazy with City, was that the day they announced Pookie and Ben Marshall?
It was. Yeah.
It's almost as if somebody at the football club knew that most of Archant would be distracted that day. Thanks for that. But no, it was a good day. Good day. Good few days away in the West Country, but firmly plugged back in, looking forward to seeing what the season holds.
Did you get to watch the England game on the Tuesday?
Which one was that again, Mike?
That would have been the Colombia game, because I know you're a little bit concerned.
Yeah, there was a bit of delicate negotiations going on. I think we went and did some sort of bridal kind of would be happy type events in the day, so there was a bit of a trade off. Although, to give her a due, she's not a football fan per se, but she's now firmly plugged in.
I mean
the good thing was, obviously, this was the Saturday before the one just gone. The nightmare scenario would have been England 3 o'clock kickoff, and I think there were one or two weddings. I saw some on social, wasn't there one or two weddings that had to factor that in.
You've got to embrace that, haven't you?
I don't think I'd have been allowed to embrace it. No,
I don't think you would.
As it was, it was France Argentina the day of my wedding, and
that was bad enough, mate.
That was bad enough. So 4-3. Can you imagine?
Yeah,
come on, Vicar, get on with it. Before you got to get back for 3 o'clock kickoff. But she's looking forward to it, as we all are. Big game Wednesday night, and then maybe a bigger one before that on Tuesday for Norwich watchers.
Yes, indeed. I'm expecting a nice and chilled pad next season now the nuptials are done. Dave, how are you? Enjoy your weekend. We've got some nice videos from North Welsh, from I saw.
Yeah, nice and lively in the Orchard Gardens. Couldn't quite handle the rowdiness of the Black Swan and the Sweat Box, as it's known locally, where the Sweat Box, just because it is very hot in there, but mainly because there's a lot of beer being chucked around, and I've made my thoughts very clear on the beer throwing. But it was really good atmosphere. I don't think you could go to any pub in the country really on Saturday and not find a good atmosphere, could you? So cracking, great performance, deservedly into the World Cup semi-finals, which feels like a very odd thing to say.
We'll get stuck into that in a bit. Not a single arrest, I believe, on Saturday in Norwich. We're talking about the class of Norwich, obviously, here, but there we go. All right, just before we get stuck into the proper stuff, remember you can get in touch with us all here to share your thoughts, set our agenda. Just send an email to thepinken@archant.co.uk, or you can get in touch via all the possible social media channels you can imagine, be it on Pinken or any of our personal profiles. Make sure you don't miss a single podcast this summer and through next season by subscribing. All the details you need are at pinken.com/podcast. So I've written here England. This would be the point at which you'd start singing Three Lions, Dave. But I'll save you from it. It's almost certainly still coming home, isn't it, Mark? England against Sweden. I mean, let's be honest. That was easy.
It was. Yeah, it was a lot more comfortable than I think any of us really thought. And it was an absolute dog of a game for the first 20 minutes, wasn't it? Until I think both teams looked quite nervy, but then. England sort of settled down and then the class sort of shone through, really, didn't it? Once Maguire's header went in, which is a cracking header, and then one or two nervy moments went there in the second half, particularly that sort of early on in the second half, and I think Pickford had to make a really good save. But I mean, it was also a save you'd hope he'd make as well. It was his near post. I mean, if it had gone in, then he would have been the worst keeper in the world. He saves it. He's the best keeper in the world now.
Toivonen's header, wasn't it?
It was Toivonen's header, yeah.
Actually,
yeah. But then once Ali's second goal went in, it was fairly comfortable. Being an England fan, I was even a little bit concerned in the last one. I think I had a free kick on the edge of the box in the 90th minute. I just thought, if this goes in, it could still be nervy. But then, we're just so scarred, aren't we, from years gone by. But yeah, really, really pleased.
I thought that the save from, was it Berg? The one low down to his, I can't remember, it might not have been Berg, but and then Jordan Henderson's block up. That was the best, that was certainly the best save.
He just read it perfectly, didn't he? He was already there in place by the time shot arrived. So yeah, fair play to Pickford. He was good. And, you know, Sweden weren't great, but I think I felt like we were just in control of it the whole time. Even that first half when it wasn't great, we were... I think the players have got more belief than supporters, which is probably the way around should be.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't feel like they're inflicted by the past, do they? So fair play to them. But I thought Jordan Henderson was brilliant on Saturday, and I wasn't his biggest fan in the past. I think you're a Liverpool fan, aren't you, Mark? And I have been critical of him in the past, but this end of the season with Liverpool and how he's gone on with England, I really hope he's fit to play on Wednesday night, because there is the chance that he's going to miss out with a calf, is it?
Oh, possibly.
Calf knock? Is it that he got a knock of some kind, because he came off towards the end, didn't he?
These sort of ones, he'll move heaven and earth to get there. But yeah, I mean, he has definitely improved at Liverpool over the past year or so, and he actually passes the ball forwards now and sort of takes players out of play by doing that, and he's a lot better passer than people give him credit for, particularly that sort of one over the top
bit. Yeah, he did it in the game, didn't he? Put Sterling clean through, and then the keeper just got his hand on the ball, didn't he? But I mean, if Sterling finishes that off, that would have been pass of the tournament. People would have been saying, oh, he's the new Pirlo, because it was perfect, wasn't it?
Yeah. What a touch from Sterling that was. He got so much criticism, I thought, at the weekend. It's just ridiculous, really, that how he stretched that Sweden defence, and he was such an important player, I thought. I mean, his finishing is can be pretty woeful at times, but he's vital to how this England team's playing.
There's been a debate all through the weekend on social media especially, and I'm not going to go into the whole, if you criticise Sterling, you don't understand football. No. I don't think that's, everyone has an opinion, which is fine, but the work he's done, and I think the work he's done all tournament, I think there's such a merit in him starting games and working defences really hard, that then has allowed maybe a bit of opening up later on in games, and then when Rashford comes on and all this sort of stuff, Sterling's definitely producing a real useful benefit to the side, and I'd still start with him, absolutely no doubt about that.
Well, Rashford doesn't look after the ball in the same way though. I wouldn't be starting Rashford ahead of him, because Sterling can control the ball so much better.
World Cup quarter final, Pad. God, I mean, Sweden were terrible. I can't get that out of my head. And I know England did their job and they did it brilliantly. We'll see what they get in the semi. I think it completely vindicates why not finishing first in the group was a key thing, because, you know, to be the best, you've got to beat the best. That's great. Let's beat the best in the final, not in the quarters or in the second round. And they just finished the job off nicely, didn't they?
Yeah, they were, on that evidence, bang average, but then they, you know, they got past Italy. You could, in the playoff, you could say Italy are probably the Italy team for many a tournament, but still, you have to give them their due. They were well organised. But for me, I'd flip that round, and it's just the number Southgate and his coaches did on them. You're talking about Sterling there, but just the whole balance of the side. There's no arrogance about this England team. You know, it's not we'll turn up and we don't really need to worry about the opposition. You saw all you listened to the sound bites from Southgate talking about their identity and what they're good at, and that England are going into these games, and maybe we're talking about, well, that was easy, and looking at it in terms of how bad Sweden were, but England's preparation is absolutely spot on every game in this tournament. And that's not just Southgate, all those players, it's the whole network. You know, I saw an interview with Southgate saying they've got almost mission control back at St George's Park, and so many analysts and everything that's going into it, and the proof is what we're seeing on the pitch. You know, they're playing without any fear, they're able to express themselves, and I think the best line I saw over the weekend was that they actually look like, these players actually look like they're enjoying it. You know, it's not like, oh my God, this shirt is so heavy, you know, all the history that goes with it, all the baggage. We saw that with a penalty shootout, you know. Southgate talking about owning the process. You know, these are easy words to say, but they're actually playing in a manner where they believe it, and they believe that they can go out and enjoy themselves. And if you can enjoy yourself doing anything in life, but particularly in the level they're at the minute, on the biggest stage in world football, the performances will follow. So, yeah, I'm very confident they can roll over Croatia.
It's brilliant, as you said, reading some of the stuff in terms of what they did in terms of the penalty shootout and the little details just to mix it up against Colombia. Fantastic. And again, the way they kind of attacked Sweden, I thought that, you know, the BBC pundits were saying, oh, we said at halftime they need to get the ball in quicker and all this sort of stuff. And then they replayed Ali's goal as an example of that. Yet they blatantly turned down three or four crossing opportunities for making another one. And there was a lot of that in the first half, I thought, where they were consciously not crossing the ball in first time of asking. And that patience, I think we've seen run through the entire tournament so far. We'll come on to the Croatia game as well, because they may have a decision to make in terms of how they actually go about that. But I've written here, inevitable Pickford debate. So, and I know we sort of just touched on it a moment, and clearly I think I probably had a go at him a couple of pods ago in that I said he wasn't ready. And let's be clear, I didn't criticise him as a shot stopper. I was just worried that he was parrying things and maybe he wasn't experienced enough and all that. I don't know if it was obviously a great save towards the end against Colombia, although replays I don't think necessarily confirm whether it was going in or not. But that penalty save, he's just kicked on from it. And however young and inexperienced you are, you get that, don't you? You get moments where it just fills you up and you can just feed off that and just go on to a next level through the circumstances you're playing in. And that, to me, was a lot of what we saw from Pickford against Sweden. He now just seems bigger and more confident and so comfortable in his surroundings.
Well, I've heard it's all because of Thibaut Courtois' criticism and your criticism. That's why he's been so good.
Don't get me wrong. If people prove me wrong all the time, that's brilliant. I know. No one gives a shit.
You still said that he's probably the best keeper in the squad, given that Butland hadn't been on top form, didn't he? So I think that was... I don't think anyone was really quibbling that he should be number one. But, you know, I've always thought he's a good keeper, and he's improving as this tournament's going on. Like you say, he's now at a top level, and I think he's proving really popular. Maybe in a similar way to Maguire. There's quite a northern streak to this team, aren't there? And that, I don't know whether that's made them more relatable, perhaps. But you know, you've seen the video of Pickford's dad celebrating his lad going, "He's the hero! He's the hero!" Like, lots of expletives in there as well. He's, you know, really going for it. But he's, you know, a lad from the northeast, like Henderson is. You've got a few Yorkshire lads in there. Yeah. It feels like
we'll have Yorkshire won us the World Cup before we know. It'll be like the West Ham.
I'd imagine the Yorkshire Post already have that ready to roll. But I like Pickford a lot, and his saves have been at crucial moments. And in the shootout, the stuff with him claiming the ball to give to the England's next taker, I really like that, because that's almost taking it out of the moment, isn't it? And grabbing control of it and saying, right, this is what we're doing. And, you know, he had the instructions on his water bottle, but wrapped in a towel. And like Pad was saying, the planning has been absolutely meticulous. And one of the things that I read for the shootout was that they're told to pick a point in the stadium that they can look at, and that's like their reset. So if you're Harry Kane, you've got the penalty spot that's just been dug up by a load of Colombians and you've got the whole, you know, millions of people around the world watching you. You pick a certain point that you've picked before the game in the crowd, whether it's, you know, a sign, an advertising logo, a sign, a light, whatever. You look at that, you reset, and you say, right, here's what I'm doing, and you go again. And just from a psychological point of view, it feels like they've been properly prepared for all of this.
I did think watching the Russia-Croatia shootout that you could sense that maybe they hadn't quite done as much preparation. The Russians, given the first penalty, was that dink. What a moment that was.
That was terrible.
Croatia then, I'm personally glad it's not Russia, because I just would have, that game would have been an absolute nightmare in terms of what would have gone on around it, given political climates and all sorts.
Beaten them quite easily, though. They're quite similar to Sweden in how limited they are, I'd say. I mean, and you just had to have battled the inevitable sort of hysteria around in the crowd and that sort of thing, which I think England have shown that they're quite mentally prepared to be able to do that now. But by the same token, I think they'll beat Croatia as well. I mean, my slight worry in that is that, you know, Croatia have got a couple of world-class midfielders in Modric and Rakitic, and I think in the Champions League final, Modric absolutely ran the show, and that was against Henderson, so maybe Henderson's got a little bit of a point to prove. I mean, it's a difficult one, but it's probably the first time that England have come up against a team that want the possession as much as they do, and it'll be interesting to see what the possession stats are, because I think whoever dominates the ball will actually win it on Wednesday.
Yeah, does that change the thinking in terms of how England line up as well? Because I think there's been a suggestion that, you know, Henderson could kind of get outrun maybe to a degree with coming up against two in the middle against Croatia. As you said, it might be the first time that a side's done that, and he might be a bit exposed. And do you then play two holders, does Gareth?
I don't think he'll do that. I think I'd hope that players like Lingard and Ali are intelligent enough to realise what's going on and actually drop a bit deeper, and they're more than capable of keeping the ball. I don't think bringing Dyer in to sit alongside Henderson's the answer, because I don't really rate Dyer that highly at the moment. I think he's played a lot better in the past. I don't think he's in great form. I think he's shown that when he's come on. Obviously got a lot of praise around the penalty, but when he's come on, he's given the ball away quite a bit. So I wouldn't put him in. I'd stick with the same side as we've had in the past, but I think they just might need to be a little bit more switched on defensively, that Henderson can't be allowed to be overrun in the middle of the park.
I think that happened on Saturday, didn't it? Henderson was getting overrun for that first 20 minutes, and then it was noticeable that Ali and Sterling had been dropped a little bit deeper. Whether that was Southgate that tweaked it or not, I don't know, but it certainly felt more like a midfield three all of a sudden, and then they got control. I mean, Croatia's best players are Rakitic and Modric, aren't they? And if they get the ball in the central midfield, Henderson can't do it all on his own. No. But I'm with you. I think I'd stick with it, and I suppose it's fighting fire with fire almost, isn't it?
Absolutely spot on, both lads. Yeah, you know, that's the game. The central midfield area, basically what England have been doing is emptying midfield. Hasn't translated into numbers of goals from open play. It's obviously the set pieces have been really strong, but as Mark says, you know, when you've got an Ali and you've got a Lingard, Henderson's basically the anchor, and he's allowed them to break forward in a lot of these games, and obviously Sterling is buzzing in and around Kane. So if they don't do that at the right moments on Wednesday, then they will get torn to pieces, because those two are Croatia's fulcrum, as you were. So again, would echo the sentiments. It's not about changing the personnel or the shape, it's just the mindset, really. And I think it's interesting that you look at some of the friendlies England played, you can see now, again, going back to the planning that's gone in. You know, they played the Germanys, they played Brazils, and both of those games England had less possession, and there was a reason why you picked that type of calibre opposition, because eventually in a tournament of this scale you're going to come up against a team who will dominate the ball, and that may well be Wednesday night. So you'd hope a lot of the work they did in those type of friendlies would bear fruit in this one. But if there's not a responsibility from those lads in midfield, then the game will run away from England, because those two are too good of technicians to be allowed time and space to dictate.
Great shout. I've just noticed there's still dry beer on my microphone as well from the other night at Durham. But there we go.
The Railway Tavern. How was it?
We haven't spoken since. Lively. No, lively. I didn't get as soaked as Neil Perry did on Saturday. A worrying precedent, I think, ahead of my return on Wednesday. That video was our most watched piece of content, I think, over the weekend. Neil getting soaked by some jubilant England fans. A schoolboy error from Neil. He's got involved in the dancing and singing. You know, he's put himself out there. You know, you've got to stand on a playhouse like I was doing. But yeah, I'm kind of hoping the success of that video means that no one needs to try and, you know, either recreate it or top it. Let's not do that.
They've been good, those videos. It's worth going onto our websites, you know, edp24.co.uk, pinken.com. There's a montage of the scenes from around the pubs all around the county, and it's a really good watch.
And we'll be doing it all again on Wednesday night, which is exciting. Of course, the best discovery so far of this World Cup, Dave, do you want to have a stab in it?
Discovery in terms of players?
Yeah. Quite recent.
Yeah, I suppose Mbappe, we always knew a little bit ahead of this.
Don't mean that.
And
best sideline story, best discovery of an England player. As in not discovering them, but a bit about them.
Oh, right. What, as in about their character?
Yeah, or their family.
Or their family. I'm not with you, I'm afraid.
I love putting you on the spot. Yes, go on.
Harry Kane's uncle's from Old Captain.
Oh. Yes! 10 points to whoever found that out, or maybe his auntie got in touch, I don't know.
And he flew him out there as well, didn't he?
Yeah. He's one of our own. Who knew? I'd love to know. I don't know how that's happened.
Apparently,
has he always been here? Was he here when Harry was at Norwich? I want to know.
Yeah, you wonder whether he had any sort of part in it at all. But apparently, he was
Spurs fan. He's not a Norwich
big
fan.
Big Spurs fan, but apparently, he was the landlord of a pub in Spixworth.
Was he?
Yeah.
The Long Arms?
Yes, apparently.
Really?
That was the one, yeah. Someone tweeted me and said that.
Wow. There we go. Anyway, that's my favourite discovery of the World Cup. We're claiming for our own, most definitely. Right, on the sidelines, which is basically what else is happening around the World Cup, and there's only one place to go now, which is the other semi-final, France-Belgium. For all the talk of it's coming home, Paddy, this is the reason I don't know about that, because this is a powerhouse semi-final against two teams that are doing enough but have then so much quality as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, put the England car flags to one side for a minute. If they end up against Iran M2, I'm afraid it won't be coming home, but still more than exceeded expectations for me. But you know, let's get real. You know, those two terms, we're talking about development and cycles, and England's best years with this group of players, you would hope, are ahead of them. Belgium and France are right here, right now. You know, they've had tournament near misses of recent times. Their players are far more mature. They're in the peak of their careers, so enjoy it. But it won't be coming home as they will have to play either of those two. They're head and shoulders for me, the two best teams in the tournament.
And a lot of English-based players, of course, as well. Who's going to win the semi? I mean, we obviously want it to go to, you know, end of extra time, penalty shootout, 20-21, something like that, by the end of it. Who's going to come out top?
I've got to confess, I've not seen a great deal of France, but what I've seen of them, they sort of seem to play, they just do enough, don't they, and play in fits and bursts. And they let their quality players, sort of bits of individual magic, gets them through. Whereas I've seen quite a bit of Belgium, obviously being in England's group, and against Brazil on Friday night, they were absolutely magic. Like De Bruyne is just, you know, we've seen it in the Premier League. He's such a lovely player to watch, and Hazard as well. You forget how strong he is on the ball. Like, for quite a slight bloke, he's really strong and can hold on. And Lukaku just had one of those nights when he's unplayable. Sometimes he looks like a donkey. Sometimes he's just absolutely unplayable. He had an unplayable night on Friday. So I'd quite fancy Belgium to do it against France, I must admit. And you know, they've threatened to do it for a few years now. They've got a bit of a golden generation, and I think the player that really interests me in that Belgian team is Fellaini, because he's the one that completely changed it against Japan when they were 2-0 down, and other teams just don't know how to handle him. That he's such an awkward customer, so difficult to. I mean, his elbows are out. He'd be horrible to play against, and he's just the sort of player that international players don't want to play against. So, you know, whether France can cope with that will be interesting. I mean, they're all familiar to each other now. They know exactly what people's strengths and weaknesses are.
That's the perfect dynamic, isn't it? De Bruyne, Eden Hazard, Romelu Lukaku, and then Marouane Fellaini just at the back, just spoiling everything. I mean, they would be my bet, I think. But it's, you know, as you say, France can just turn it on, and Mbappe, they've got players of such great quality too.
Yeah, Pogba and Kante in midfield, you know, that's not half bad, is it? Giroud knits them together nicely at the top of the pitch as well. I mean, I think France are the team, mainly on that Argentina game, the 4-3, that I've thought have looked most like champions so far. But if Belgium click, then I think they could do it. But it's going to be a real titanic battle, I think. And then if England get past Croatia, and that is still a big if, we'll be underdogs. And you never know, that might just suit us a little bit. That, you know, no one is going to have the momentum behind them that England would if you go in the World Cup final, because it's going to feel like such a release. I mean, it already does to an extent that, if they lose to Croatia, they're not going to go home in disgrace now. They're going home hugely popular, aren't they? And people are proud of the effort that they've managed to put in already. So, you know, the pressure's off. They can just literally go for it.
It's phenomenal. I mean, Italia 90 is the first World Cup I really remember growing up. And I mean, that was just phenomenal as a 9-year-old to take that in. So I can only imagine what everyone at the moment is thinking and experiencing. A shout out to my wife on Sunday. I might have to work on Sunday if England get to the World Cup final. Even now, that just sounds like such a weird sentence to shout out. Okay, let's move on to Mailbag, which is effectively going to be our Norwich City segment. For those wanting to watch France v Belgium in the semi-final, it's going to be a cracker. Tough. You need to follow Norwich at Lincoln in pre-season. But of course, before that, Norwich did kick off their pre-season in public at King's Lynn. Paddy's obviously on his sort of honeymoon time off. I managed to squeeze in a couple of days holiday. Dave, you were the man at Lynn.
I was, alongside Chris Lakey. We both took in the start of pre-season, and it was very pre-season-y.
It's great that Kingsland Town put on 18 minutes of highlights, so I think most people can probably get a feel for what the game was like from that. But in your words?
Yeah, I mean, Norwich did look tired. They're being worked very hard in training at the moment, as they should do. They had had a lot of double sessions. They did have a light session in the morning ahead of the game, and once Daniel Farker had highlighted that after the game, and you look back on it, you think, yeah, they did look leggy. He said we were talking about Timo Pukki, and he said that normally Pukki would be faster than that. For me, he was the brightest spark in the team. He looked like could be a bit of a crowd favourite in the making there, I'd have thought. He's really buzzed around, and Srebeni wasn't able to make the most of it, really. Dennis Srebeni, he's still looking a little bit short of confidence at the moment. He clattered against the bar in the second half, missed a good chance in the first, so he just needs to get a goal under his belt and start trying to build some confidence. Or but you know, you can't judge anyone too harshly on the start of at the start of pre-season. You know, even by the end of it, you have to sort of limit yourself a little bit, because obviously some players, depending on how experienced and how much they trust their bodies, hold a little bit back, don't they? They don't want to get injured in pre-season. They want to be ready for the first game. And I was quite impressed with the Anglicism of Daniel. Is that the right word?
Yeah, we'll give it to you.
He said we're preparing for the real deal, which I didn't think sounded like a very German phrase, but he's obviously picked it up along the way. So he said, you know, pre-season, it doesn't matter, we're not getting ready for pre-season, we're getting ready for the real deal. And you just try and take little glints of what might be to come in pre-season, I think. And Lynn scored a good goal, start of second half. Toby Hilliard, Norwich sort of switched off at the back somehow. Ryan Hawkins, really good bit of play, nice cross, and he finished from close range. And Matt Gill actually took control from half time of Norwich, the under-23s boss, and then on the hour they chucked on all the young kids, with, to be fair, most of the senior boys looking pretty knackered by that point. And Adam Ida and Devontae Aaron-Sibir scored the goals that mattered, and Daniel, I think, was quite thankful that they'd made sure that they didn't leave the walks on the back of a draw or a defeat. Yes, because some people, as our live updates showed, are still always looking for a stick to beat them with, because straight away there was some comments, I can't believe we're not beating Kings then. But you just have to try and remain a bit patient for the season, don't you?
No doubt it would have been clocked that Norwich's senior players didn't manage to actually score in the first hour of that game, given what happened last year. Loads of talk, of course, about Norwich and pre-season coming up. Be interesting with Timo Pukki, how he develops, because I guess with Miley Watkins, he came on, looked a little bit sharp, as signings do sometimes, banged one into the top corner, and then as the real stuff, the more embedded they got in the squad, the worse they became. So hopefully what Timu brings to the side will continue to flourish. We did ask some Norwich City questions. So a few people got in touch on Twitter, so I'll put these around the table. Don't have to be particularly long with your answers, but let's get on with them. Here we go. Lewis, I'm going to say NCFC Lewis on Twitter. Now realising the overload in midfield, there's a lot of players, would you have renewed Alex Tetti's contract? Is he needed, Pad?
Oh yeah, most definitely, yeah. For the simple reason that, you know, if you take him out of the equation, what are we talking about? Obviously you could have a debate about how the two mix in midfield in front of the back four would pan out, but I think it needs to be a little bit more than two ball playing lads in there. You do need a ball winner, because Norwich's best phases of last season for me was a Tete and a Tribal, and they complemented, they weren't a mirror image of each other. So if we need a ball winning central midfielder, then, and we, there's still a question mark against Young Godfrey, potentially we'll go back out on loan. Thompson is way off it in terms of being in Norwich's first team after his injury problem, so I don't see too many other candidates if Alex Tete hadn't been in that squad. And that's setting aside the experience factor. Again, commendable, they want to bring young players through, but in and amongst that, and Farker's acknowledged this, you need a little bit of experience, and he certainly ticks that box. So no, for me, to answer that question, the right deal all day long.
Adcock Ivy as well. If it were the same cost, would you rather loan Jordan Rhodes or sign Martin Waghorn? And then he's put some sort of weird devil emoji with a good luck.
Wijndal every day of the week. I do not see this Rhodes thing at all. He scored 5 goals in 2 seasons. He's, for me, is one of the biggest fallacies that I can ever fathom out. Why so many clubs have paid so much money to get that lad to their football club? Last 2 years, he's done nothing. Why would he embellish what Norwich already got?
Maybe if you could get him for 500 grand as a loan fee and paying him 5 grand a week. But Wednesday have made the point that this is to try and save money. They want several million pounds as a fee, even if they're going to reduce it. And they want someone to pay a fair wedge of his 40 grand a week wages. You're not going to get him on a deal that makes it cheap. But anyway, you two?
I quite like Rhodes. But I mean, Paddy's right that he's not done it in the last 2 years. But I mean, you know, Norwich's problem is obviously scoring goals. And he is an absolute poacher. He has shown it in his career that he is sort of the predator that you want. Whether he's still got it is open to debate, and that's obviously why Norwich don't want to be paying a, how much was the loan fee they wanted?
3 million.
3 million loan fee, and then taking on a fair amount of his 40 grand wages. I mean, that's just absolute pie in the sky. I think it's one, if it's going to happen, I think will happen quite towards the end of the loan window. I think as Wednesday will sit tight and hopes another show in town comes in for him. If they don't, then I think, you know, Norwich then put the offer on the table that they may have done already. We don't know the ins and outs at the moment. I think what we can say is that they are interested in him, aren't they?
So the week ahead, we'll wrap this up quite briefly because, of course, Norwich are at Lincoln on Tuesday night. We'll all be there. It's all 3 of us at the moment, isn't it? I think that's the plan. Yeah. Mark says yes, he's in charge. So it's all 3 of us going to Sinsel Bank. I think the last time I went there was for another pre-season friendly, and Chris Sutton was in charge of Lincoln. Sean Raggett's return as well. He will probably play. He got a game against Lynn in a back three.
He did, and he looks very like Christoph Zimmermann. He's had a very similar haircut, and they're very similar size as well, aren't they? So there were a few times when I was struggling to tell which one was which.
Brilliant.
Apart from the fact that Christoph is probably significantly better with the ball at his feet.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Raggett, what to make of him? He's, you know, if there's a ball to be won in the air, he'll win it. That's what he does. But whether he is ready on the floor yet, I'm still not sure. But again, it's the first game of pre-season. He looked a bit slow and tired, like most of them did. So I'll reserve judgment. I mean, there was a big chunk of senior players who obviously didn't play Friday night. Off the top of my head, Alex Tetti, Nelson Oliveira, Hanley, Jamal Lewis, you know, there was a full team. So I think we can probably read from the ones who weren't involved, because they weren't all injured, of course. They maybe had little niggles or were a little overtired, that the majority of them will come in at Lincoln. So whether Sean Raggett will then be on the bench, I don't know. But I went there and watched him for our loan watch last year. I can't remember when it was, December-ish time, something like that. And the thing I remember is the air raid sirens going off when they go forward for their set pieces. So hopefully they roll that out for the friendlies as well.
Oh, yeah, for pre-season. Why wouldn't you have an air raid siren? Crawley then on Thursday, sort of late afternoon, early evening at Colney. It's behind closed doors. We'll hopefully get a key to going behind the door ourselves, and of course pinken.com will be the place to keep track of that. Go on, Dave.
What's the secret password? It's going to be in German, I'm sure of that.
Totally relaxed. And then it's tour time, Pads. You're going to be our man once Paul Chesterton finishes his England jaunt. I think that's probably how he'd describe it. I don't think that is how he'd describe it. But he's having a whale of time, Paul, over in Russia. But then Germany. And you almost know all the places you're going to need to be now.
Well, I know the towns. That's the start. We'll hopefully get the actual stadia in due course. But a little bit surprised. Saw the itinerary there over the weekend. I mean, I know there'll be one or two diehards, if that's not a derogatory term, Norwich fans, and I think they're going to have to pick and choose, because it looks like the Sunday and the Tuesday double headers is going to be difficult to do both. So which is a shame for those guys, but for me it sounds like, from reading the stuff Dave and Lakers did, it might be the first chance to see Buendia, so that could be a big bonus. And Kenny McLean as well, I'd like to think I know he's back in and amongst it, but given his extended summer with Scotland, they might wait until Germany till we get a sighting of him. So yeah, those two for me would be the standout. What are we going to get?
Fantastic. And then Wednesday night, we will all be doing our England coverage here, there and everywhere. I'm going to probably get drenched is the word. I'm a professional. That slipped out. So that'll be fun. We will, of course, be all across Norfolk. You'll be able to follow all the videos over at all our websites, to be honest, but also on Facebook. So keep an eye out for those. The EDP Facebook page is probably the best place to start. And, of course, all the summer news regarding Norwich City. It's, what is the date today? 8th? 9th of July?
9th today,
ninth
I think, yeah.
Today, and it's the 4th of August, the first game, isn't it? So... Mm-hmm. So that's frighteningly close.
Month left of the transfer window.
Month today of permanent signings. Good knowledge, Dave. That's right. But then they'll just sign players on loan with you to a permanent after that. It'll be interesting how that all works out. But of course, all the latest speculation and definitive transfer news you'll be able to find at pinken.com. We'd normally have any other business now, but we haven't got any, have we? So
no, you just reminded me, Ben Woodburn has... cropped up over the weekend, isn't he? Another Liverpool lad. He had been linked in the past. I think last January we had a rumour mill along those lines, but he's the guy that burst onto the scene with that goal for Wales on his debut, didn't he? And still only 18, very highly rated. And the same as with Harry Wilson, really, who did so well at Hull on loan from Liverpool last season, is that basically everyone in the Championship wants these two lads. But Liverpool are keeping them, A, while they've still got internationals away due to World Cup, and B, because Klopp wants to assess them before letting them out. But when we did the story yesterday, somebody did say to me, you know, why sign an 18-year-old from Liverpool when we've got Adam Ida here, who's 17, he just scored when he came into pre-season. There's a lot of hype around him, isn't there? We haven't really seen him in the under-23s yet, so maybe it's a little bit unjustified, but there's definitely some excitement around the lad because he is a poacher, so maybe that's a fair point. But I think with both of those guys, if either of them are coming to Norwich, and whether both would come to Norwich seems kind of doubtful, but if one of them ends up here, you'd have thought it's going to be the end of the loan window, isn't it?
That's the joy of pre-season. There's a few people who can stake some claims, and of course we will let you know who they are and how they're getting on while it all unravels. But we are done for now. Thanks all for listening. Goodbye to everyone. Cheers, Dave.
Cheers.
Cheers, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pad. Good to have you back.
Cheers, Paul.
Remember, pinken.com, all the latest Norwich City news, analysis, opinion and transfer insight. All being well, we'll be back, if I can get it out, for another edition next Monday, when one way or another the World Cup will be done, and we'll only have eyes for Norwich City, be it the club ranked 34th at the home of the world champions or not. Until then, may your fingers be tightly crossed and your beers always refilled. Goodbye.